Anna Maria has graciously agreed to, on behalf of everyone, answer a couple of questions, all right? Anna Maria, what am I holding here?
A cincture.
Correct. This is called a cincture, all right? Anna Maria, what's a cincture for?
Helps keep the album.
Exactly. It keeps the servers and any other and clergy and any other liturgical ministers albs, or the baptismal garment underneath the vestments that we wear close together, so it's not flopping around. We don't trip and all those sorts of things. And it's not a particularly holy thing unless you're a Franciscan or a Dominican, and it's part of their habit or something like that. But it's a very functional thing. All right. What would the uninitiated call this cincture?
A rope.
Exactly. Okay. The uninitiated would call it a rope. You can have a seat. I'll keep this here for a minute. Okay. All right. Very good. And so the cincture actually has a very, I don't really need this because I actually have my own microphone. I'm going to do this. You can take this. All right. The cincture actually has a very important role in my own growth and development about the way God interacts with his people, all right? And as a second-year theologian, seminarian, one of the duties that I had at my teaching parish was to, like Colton is tonight, MC the Triduum, all right? And we, you know, it's been in the seminary for a couple of years, knew a little bit about liturgy, not enough probably to be coordinating a team of 20 or 30 people putting together these things, but that was on the docket for the things that I had to do. And I remember very, very clearly, very, very clearly at the Easter Vigil, all right? We had practiced earlier that day, and we're maybe 15 or 20 minutes out from the start of the Easter Vigil. We've probably got about 12 or so in the ceremony crew, including 5 or 6 servers who had practiced flawlessly earlier in the day. And I'm nervous as a cat. This is the most important night of the year. I've never done this before. I've got responsibility for all these people being in the right place at the right time. And then imagine a seventh grade boy, all right? What is a seventh grade boy going to do with a rope, all right, or a cincture? What do you think? All right. And here we had worked so hard, all right, and this kid who actually went on to be a pretty good hockey player at Holy Angels High School back in the day, all right, he's trying to lasso one of the younger servers, okay? he's trying to lasso one of the younger servers with his cincture. And I'm looking at it, first selfishly thinking, this is going to be a disaster, okay? This liturgy, this most important liturgy of the year, is going to be an absolute disaster, all right? But then I step back, okay, mentally and spiritually for a second, and I said, there's got to be something here, all right? There's just got to be something here that this thing that we do that is the most important thing that we do. It is the most important thing that we do. We celebrate the Mass. We celebrate the sacred mysteries. We celebrate the Lord coming to us, all right? It is the most sublime thing that happens on this side of the veil of heaven, where heaven literally, spiritually comes down to us. And we're given super important roles to a kid who is lassoing another kid 5 minutes before the start of Mass. What God would do that? What God would put such responsibility for these most important things in the hand of this kid, all right? It doesn't make any sense. It simply makes no sense. It makes no sense in my mind. It makes no sense in everybody who's worried that everything is going to come off perfectly executed in terms of where to be, when to be, hitting the notes, making sure we got the cues, everybody knows what they're doing. It makes no sense. Yet God does it anyway. God does it anyway. in the reality and the beauty of the celebration of the Mass, we rely on kids. We rely on kids. Well, and the truth is, God relies on kids too. He relies on you and me. What does he do? He humbles himself enough to put the most important event that we do in the hands of kids, in the hands of maybe some people who might not completely appreciate what we're doing. He puts it in the hands of priests who might not be all that great at what they're doing. He still does it. He still does it. And the heart of it, the heart of the fact that he puts all of this into the hands of very imperfect, very immature, very imprecise, very, very imperfect people says way more about him than it does about us. He humbles himself to come to us. He humbles himself to put himself into our hands. Think about it. Just think about it. How many people really have a vision of an all-powerful, almighty God in heaven that humbles him so much that he puts himself into the hands of very imperfect and sometimes really sinful people? Sometimes people who don't really know what a cincture is. Why does he do that? He does that because he's humble. He's humble, and he loves us so much that he feeds us with himself. He loves us so much and trusts us so much that he puts himself into our hands. Isn't that an amazing thing? It's really an amazing thing. A God who loves us so much that he enters the world, feeds us, trusts us, when he has no business trusting us. He just doesn't. There's plenty of evidence that we can't be trusted. Yet he does this anyway. He does this anyway in order to show how much he has entered into our life and our world. He doesn't lift us up to him and then put us down. He comes down to us so that we can go back up to him. And it started with that promise. Started with that promise that we read about in the Old Testament in Exodus. All the descriptions of the Passover, the promise that with the blood on the door, the plague of the death of the firstborn would pass over the people of Israel. Very, very specific prescriptions of the Passover, all right? And it shouldn't be lost. It should not be lost in the reading of the Passover and all the various details of how the meal is to be prepared and all the prayers and stuff that go with it. And he says very, very clearly, he says very, very clearly, this is to be instituted as a perpetual memorial. Perpetual. This is a very long time. This is a very long time. Do this forever. Do this forever. Remind yourself forever what I have done for you. Remind yourselves forever that I have freed you from slavery. As Jesus comes in then and institutes the Eucharist, he does it in the form of a Passover meal, which he becomes the sacrificial lamb and redoes that in a new covenant. In a new covenant that will last forever. Do this in memory of me until he comes again, St. Paul tells us. And every time we're reminded of that, even in the midst of the very, very basically routine way we do things, it's beautiful, it's lovely, and especially if you know what's going on, it's even more lovely. But the truth is, it's very straightforward. It's very simple. It's very simple, but that's the way our God is. He's actually quite simple. He comes into the world, He comes into the world humbly and feeds himself to us. And it's an amazing thing, that humility of our God, which he calls us to. He shows his humility in giving himself to us, but then he shows his humility in living it in his body, in the call to serve, getting down on his knees to wash the feet of the disciples who are clueless. They don't get it. They don't want to receive it. Peter doesn't want to receive it. Then he says he has to. It's okay. Do it. Do it again and again and again and again. But it's all about humility. It's all about humility. That God is humble and calls us to be humble. He calls us to be humble to serve. All right? Beginning in the washing of the feet of the apostles and spreading out into the world. Because the truth is that humility, although it's not that cool or that popular, actually is the way to win people. It is the way to win people. When you talk to people, when you talk to your friends and relatives who are not here tonight, and maybe who rarely, if ever, come, oftentimes what they're going to say is that sometimes the people they encounter who come to church aren't necessarily that humble. They're about telling them how wrong they are about everything else, all right? And so the first thing, if we're going to get the message across, is to be humble, to serve, to humbly tell the truth, not self-righteously tell the truth, to be humble as the Lord was humble, to continue to participate in the sacrifice and the memorial that is to be perpetual. But it can only be perpetual if his people listen and respond and actually do it. Our God is an amazing God. He's an amazing God. And he gives us this perpetual sacrifice, this perpetual gift, and this perpetual example of humility precisely to give us an example to do it for others. Whether it feels like the world is going our way or definitely not, all right? He's still humble. He's still present. He still gives himself to us. And it's amazing. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to put himself into the hands of sinful people. He doesn't have to rely on kids chronologically, spiritually mature, or emotionally. He doesn't have to. But he still does. In his love for us, in his trust for us, as misguided as I might think it is and you might think it is, he still does. And therein lies the example of the simplicity of what we do in the most important thing that we do. Unambiguously clear. This is the most important thing that we do. There's a lot of important stuff that we do. This is number one. This is absolutely, unequivocally number one. That we realize, receive, and understand the humility of our God who loves us, allow ourselves to be fed by him so that we can be humble and serve others as well.